Alongside Joe Giglio, I'm Joe Ovias. Got the halftime show sizzle reel. NC State losing last night with more of the same from the Wolfpack. Plus, the NFL playoffs are right around the corner. Let's log on to the internet, shall we? It's brought to you by Geico. You got a choice of ways that you can save on car insurance. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Go online to geico.com or stop by the Geico office nearest you. Let's get it.
Number five.
Well, I'm disappointed, Joe. The Tampa Bay Rays are only going to have one home next season if there is a Major League Baseball season.
Yeah.
Major League Baseball officials earlier this week scrapped Tampa's idea of having a sister city, meaning they'd have 41 home games in Tampa and 41 in Montreal. I thought it was rather inventive.
No.
No?
No. Either you're going to be in Tampa or just move at this point.
You didn't like that. That was basically MLB stance. This isn't a traveling circus, sir.
It's not, right.
You're not the Harlem Globetrotters. But it was, we'd be half, right?
There's a movie that Gold would reference all the time that I forgot the name of it. I don't know if he's listening right now. It was like Bingo Long's Traveling All-Stars or something like that. No. This is one of the things about Major League Baseball that once again kind of shows you how messed up things are right now with ownership, where they continue to cry poor and everything else when we know better than that. Either you're in Tampa and you're committed to Tampa or you're not. Straight up. And splitting it in half and trying to tease Montreal with their return of baseball, forget that stuff. That's ridiculous.
You figure they sell some tickets, though, in those 40 games in Montreal, right?
Maybe. I mean
we're talking about a really good team here now. They've won the division the last 2 years.
But is it your team, right?
Right. I'm just saying it's not a bad product.
It's not a bad product, but it's not yours.
Okay.
You know? So, but it's not the Expos. So true. I can see where people are going to push back on that. It's kind of like the NFL model with they go to London all the time. They expect to have fans. I'm like, those aren't your teams.
But
it's an exhibition at that point.
The prototype would be now that the Hornets, the year New Orleans basically got flooded, right?
Yeah.
Ended up playing in Oklahoma City, and Oklahoma City did such a good job in the interim. They ended up with their own team. Obviously, they got them from Seattle, but they proved they could be an NBA city. I'm wondering if that wasn't the thought process for Montreal here.
To me, I think that you should mess around and see if you can put Major League Baseball here in the state of North Carolina. But that's just me. I know some people in the audience would roll their eyes at that thought, but when you actually look at the growth patterns of the area, we're not all that different in terms of population from some major league cities like Milwaukee. And nobody would ever think twice about a Major League Baseball team in Milwaukee, right?
Right.
So I'm of the mind that if you really wanted to be forward thinking about Major League Baseball, you put a team in Vegas, like everybody else, and then you put a team here in North Carolina. Now, is that a Charlotte thing? I don't know. We're not, this area is not infrastructure-wise ready for a Major League Baseball team. And based on conversations that I've had with people who would know better, it wouldn't necessarily affect things like the Durham Bulls, who, Capital Broadcasting as a parent company owns the Durham Bulls. But, infrastructure-wise, Raleigh is just not necessarily there yet. I mean, hell,
Saying Apple and Amazon money, or you're saying actual city?
Like infrastructure, okay. Like actual city infrastructure. Parking, population and money, I think, can sustain it, especially as you just mentioned with Apple and Amazon and Citrix downtown, et cetera, right? It's the...
What if the Rays move to Durham?
Well, you put them at the Durham Bulls Athletic Park. I've been on busy nights like Star Wars night, the DBAP. That gets back to the infrastructure. That Durham Freeway is not ready for something like that. And that's the problem. That's the problem we have. That's why the Downtown South project was so fascinating, because they theoretically were going to solve some of these infrastructure problems.
Well, you wanted to ruin my traffic pattern by doing that, then fine.
I'm so sorry.
That's where I drive every day.
I know. But I know the News and Observer recently did an update on that downtown south project, and without the MLS, where exactly things stand with the stadium. And it's like, well, without a Major League Soccer team as a sell, they're not building a new stadium. I mean, that's just how it is, all right? So if they don't have a new stadium, then what's Downtown South look like? Well, it ain't gonna look like the renderings, I can tell you that.
Number four.
Did you see the sizzle reel for the Super Bowl halftime show today?
No, but I am excited about the Super Bowl halftime.
So you got Kendrick Lamar. He's working on something, and all of a sudden it goes to the beach, and you see LA in the background, and it starts with "Forgot About Dre." Dr. Dre is there, and Snoop Dogg is there, and all this stuff. Basically, everything that I used to make fun of with the Super Bowl halftime shows, that they were just playing to an older demographic. What about the Utes? They're now doing it for me. In other words, the Super Bowl halftime show is the official marker of you and me being old. For real, for real.
Yeah. Yeah. I had already accepted that.
I'm having a hard time accepting that.
Are you?
But I am.
I guess I'm 4 years ahead of you, so.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just having a hard time processing the formative stuff of my youth being used now as a nostalgia place to get us to watch Super Bowl halftime shows. In the same way that The Who was used, right, or Rolling Stones were used. I'm like, oh, geez. Now, for Snoop and Dre, they don't care because it means money. It keeps them top of mind, right? I mean, one of the greatest pivots of all time is Snoop Dogg. Now he's become this marketing force, right? So they're good for them. They're making money. I got no problem with that. But it is kind of throwing me for a loop that this is now Dr. Dre and Snoop are now considered safe halftime entertainment.
I think there was some pushback. Remember, they had the Super Bowl in Atlanta, and they had a couple country acts. Atlanta's known for hip-hop, and they didn't have anybody. I think L.A., this was a reaction to that, more maybe so, and also an acceptance of where we are, perhaps. I mean, the Janet Jackson Super Bowl was the Panthers' Jake Delhomme.
Yeah, it was like 20 years ago.
It was 03, right? Or 04? Yeah. I mean, yeah. Guys, I think our acceptance of such things has also, not that we need nudity in the Super Bowl halftime show,
well,
but I think our standards of accepting certain things have changed.
It would, I mean,
in the last
some
16
halftimes
years
more entertaining, you know?
Yeah. How many of the people who protested the Janet Jackson thing and were clutching the pearls are the same people who voted for Donald Trump?
Well,
probably a pretty good concentric circle there in your Venn diagram.
Well, I don't even need to make it about Donald Trump.
No, it's not. But I'm saying
what I'm going to say is
this, but it's also
people,
how your culture changes, right?
This how many people were clutching pearls over the Janet Jackson thing, but know every word to Nothing But a G thing?
Probably a number.
Yeah. So it's all kind of funny in what we clutch pearls over and what we don't. Sipping on gin and juice, man. Let's go. All right, next up.
Number three.
Which NBA story would you like to start with first, Joe? The Lakers being in disarray? Or
can we talk about the Lakers sucking?
Okay, we could start there.
It's funny, like the NBA right now is kind of backburnered for a variety of reasons, but I am absolutely enjoying the schadenfreude of the Lakers being atrocious right now.
So the Lakers made a big splash this offseason by acquiring Russell Westbrook. Well, it hasn't quite worked out well for them. Lose again last night, this time to the Pacers, who have had their own injury issues and are not exactly a great team. They lose, and in this game, Coach Frank Vogel benched Russell Westbrook with about four minutes left in the loss. Westbrook was 5 of 17 from the field, and when he was taken out, they brought in Malik Monk, who's supposed to be a better shooter, of course. This has all been about fit with LeBron. Does Westbrook fit with LeBron? And it's almost, this, to me, I think you work it out with Westbrook and you fire Vogel. That's what I think the play is going to be. Of course, that's going to be LeBron James's call. LeBron, though, after the game, sounded like LeBron.
How was Russ after the game? Is that the sort of thing that bothers him?
Have you followed Russ throughout his career?
Not as close as you have, probably.
Okay. Have you followed Russ throughout this season? Yeah. Would you think that would bother Russ not being in the late game? A great answer.
I'm not in that business of pointing fingers or pointing blame or trying to put a quote at the end or at the start of somebody's someone's commentator of what they feel, you know, our coaching staff or Frank is or where Russ is or where I'm at or AD. If it's not positive for me, it's not my lane. I'm not a negative person. You got something to ask me besides trying to show somebody I am supposed to.
Yeah. LeBron's going to be the one who makes the decision what happens with the Lakers.
I don't think they're all going to be there
by the trade deadline.
No. You said Frank Vogel.
I think it'll be the coach. Yeah.
How much of it is it really Rob Pelinka or Frank Vogel? I mean, this is LeBron James's team.
Right.
This is what he wanted. So the onus is on him for these decisions.
But I also think it takes time to learn how to play with LeBron. You know, we've seen this before.
Yeah. And also a diminished.
Not everyone can do it either. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And then, Anthony Davis' injury compounds some of those issues as well. So,
the only thing missing from that exchange was somebody going, "Why are you so pissy right now?"
Oh, man.
It's the only thing that was missing from that.
Lakers 22-23 right now in the eighth spot out west. They need to solve some problems. But at least LeBron doesn't need to have a sign that says it's been 0 days since Kyrie Irving screwed up since Kyrie Irving did something, right?
Yeah.
Kyrie Irving fined $25,000 for directing obscene language toward a fan, the NBA announced Thursday. 4 minutes left in the second quarter. Nets lost to Cleveland on Monday. A fan courtside could be heard heckling Irving, who responded with obscene language. I don't know if we want to blame Kyrie for this, but it does feel like, is it a day that ends in Y? Oh, something happened with Kyrie.
Yeah, I don't know. The fine seems kind of weak sauce for me. But yeah,
could be performative.
Next up.
Number two.
So NC State did that thing again last night where they get everybody mad and then they totally redeem themselves but end up losing. That was the case against Virginia Tech that came out slow, which is a bit of an eye-opener. I don't know about you, but going into halftime, Gilio, my thought was, and I tweeted this last night, I go, State's going to shoot like 65% in the second half. Just watch. Sure enough, they couldn't miss. They get back in that game. I think they were down like 2 at one point, had a chance to win. Not so sure about that play that there was 2 timeouts that they needed to draw that up. Didn't necessarily work out that, you know, for the best. And they end up dropping that to Virginia Tech. We're in broken record territory now with the Wolfpack, and here's Kevin Keats, head coach of NC State, after the game, where, to NC State's credit, they have very short-term memories. They will fight back. They will plug away, and they will make things interesting, even if it does end up with a loss.
Man, our team's got a lot of fight in them, and, that's what I'm proud of. You look at, you know, at halftime, offensively, we struggled in the first half. We wasn't very sharp offensively in the first half. But the conversation at halftime was, we've been here before. We talked about the Louisville game when we were down 14 at half. And just rely on your defense. I thought we played good enough defense in the first half where the game didn't get away from us. We just didn't score. I thought we came out in the second half with great energy. We did a tremendous job. Guys got going. We scored off of turnovers. We scored off of great defensive possessions. And it's tough because, you know, this team is fighting their ass off, and it's about 4 or 5 plays in that game that if we probably could get back, it's probably a different outcome.
And that's Kevin Keats after the game. And he's right. If certain things change in a handful of games this season, I know Mike Krzyzewski talked about it after they beat NC State on Saturday. You're talking about a state team with a winning record in the ACC as opposed to what you see right now. But your record is your record. You haven't gotten bounces to go your way, or you haven't changed one of those plays, and you got to be judged on what on these games being lost ultimately, and that's too bad because again, this team does fight.
Yeah, I think NC State's biggest problem on the conference record front is who they're playing. There's 3 bad teams in the ACC. They're only going to see those 3 teams each once. In the case of Georgia Tech, who they struggle with, they're only playing them there. They get BC here, and the Pitt game is there. So, Nobody wants to hear that. But yeah, there's some wins that can fatten up your record. We've seen that so far, just not with NC State's schedule. Yesterday was a tough game because they played Virginia Tech, a team they had just beat, 2 weeks ago up there.
Yeah.
Virginia Tech coming off of a COVID break. They weren't quite up to speed. But State beat them. I thought State had a good plan up there. I thought Virginia Tech played like a team, like the old ACC. When you saw a team a second time, you were motivated by that first meeting. You were motivated. And I thought Virginia Tech was embarrassed that they lost at home to NC State. And I thought they played that way, building a 15-0 lead to start the game. NC State's been a bad first half team this year. That's something that they have to fix. Now, can Kevin convince them that the game starts, really the start of the first half is the start of the second half? I don't know. He might have to play some mind tricks there.
Next up.
The number one story of the day.
We're number one. We're number one.
NFL playoffs this weekend. Excuse me. I had to sneeze there. So I've been out, and I'm still dealing with, if you can hear it in my voice, COVID. I got COVID. Tested positive on Tuesday. Been at home. My house has been dealing with this now for like the last 2 weeks. You know what happens when you're stuck at home, Julia?
You get a little... No, you watch a lot of ESPN.
I watch so much ESPN. Like, I'm back in college levels of watching ESPN. You just sit. I got my cup of noodle soup, right? Ramen, because it was 10 for $5 on the BOGO special or whatever. Anyway, so I've been watching copious amounts of ESPN as of late. And one of the interesting storylines related to the NFL playoffs is a conversation about Patrick Mahomes, quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs, and Josh Allen for the Buffalo Bills. Now, Josh Allen has been on one since that loss to New England, the first meeting, where New England just ran the ball a bunch. There's been a shift in how Buffalo has been using Josh Allen, and you've seen him be used more as a runner. Now, the Buffalo Bills are made up of what in terms of the coach himself and the front office? They are made up of ex-Panthers guys. Sean McDermott, the head coach, was a defensive coordinator for the Panthers. Was it Brandon Bean?
Yes.
Was a front office guy for the Panthers. So they have some familiarity with a guy like Josh Allen in the sense that they had Cam Newton.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that always bugged us during Cam Newton's prime was the reluctance to just unleash Cam. Don't make him something he's not, right? And you can see that turnaround going into the playoffs, and it, the big come-to-fruition moment was in their playoff win against the New England Patriots last week. But I do feel that the Chiefs present a completely different test in terms of the way they've been playing defense, and I'm not counting Patrick Mahomes out until he's actually out, so to speak. And I've seen too much up and down play from Josh Allen historically in his career versus what we see out of Patrick Mahomes, who's still going to wow you one way or the other, even if he starts off a little off. And it's been interesting to see recency bias on ESPN with a lot of the analysts where they're talking about, man, I'd love to have Josh Allen right now. And I'm thinking to myself, over Patrick Mahomes, who has proved he could do this more often than not, versus Josh Allen, who's currently on a hot one right now. I'm not there yet on Josh Allen, even though he has been absolutely fun to watch.
This is the Clemson principle, right? During the year with Deshaun Watson and later Trevor Lawrence, Clemson wouldn't run those guys against Wake Forest or Louisville or any of the other teams they just run over. But when it got to the playoffs against Alabama, oh, look at that.
Oh, hey.
Hey, we need you. So I think it's smart what Buffalo has done with Josh Allen. But they also had Devin Singletary. So Buffalo is finding their stride.
Yeah.
And the question is, can they get – and they beat the Chiefs earlier this season. Can they get the Chiefs in a situation where Mahomes is trying to do too much again?
But you would agree that the Chiefs team that they beat earlier in the year –
different on defense. Yes.
Were not – I mean, when we were sitting here talking about how the Chiefs defense was such a liability that – I mean, not that they weren't going to make the playoffs, but people were just done with the Chiefs at that point.
And not only the defense, Joe, but the offense truly was a two-trick pony.
Yeah.
It was, let me try to get it to Kelsey, let me try to get it to Rekill. If not, there was nothing else. So it was Mahomes was forcing everything. and defenses were not respecting anything else, which, you know, is a way to get at Mahomes and to make him make mistakes. It'll be interesting to see what adjustments will the Bills make in this game, because they were successful in the second time against New England. And then the third time against New England is also, hey, how are you going to respond and how are we going to respond to your response? And I think that's where Sean McDermott can make his money. That's where the Bills can really put their path pointed towards the Super Bowl and make Mahomes make a few mistakes, just enough mistakes, because the Bills aren't going to play a perfect game again. You had one of those. You're only going to have one of those, right?
No, there's no way they're going to be able to match what they did against the Patriots. And there was a little extra oomph to do it after the Patriots as well, given what we saw in the regular season.
So there could be a letdown there, but there could also be, you know what? What's in front of us now? What's our problem? Because remember, they got knocked out by the Chiefs last year. So I think it'll be the game of the weekend. Looking forward to it. I think it's going to be fun.